Catherine is a National Science Foundation integrative graduate, education and research training, healthy aging, science, wow, science graduate
that's
fellow.
Me,
that's wrong one. I'm sorry. I'm either I'm going to have to review that one before I go through that. But Lisa is a student at, does that one sound better?
Yes.
At UNT Health Science Center, pursuing her MPH in environmental health and epidemiology. She has a BS already in biology with an emphasis in zoology. She has extensive background working with a variety of animals, all the way from birds to tigers. That exceeds my limits. And her interests include zoonotic diseases, particularly reservoir ecology and predictive wildlife surveillance. So just please welcome Lisa.
I just have to start off by saying I have no relationships to disclose. And as he just mentioned, I do have a background working with a variety of animals, and that's led me to my interest in public health and zoonotic disease. I'm going to talk to you today about bats disease and what as public health professionals we should know and what we can do. I don't really want to make bats the bad guys because I think they are some really important animals to our environment, but I do think it's important for us to understand not only disease in humans, but disease in animals and the environment in which they are found. So why is this an important subject? Oh, there it is. Thanks. Okay, 70 to 75% of emerging and re-emerging diseases are zoonotic in origin. And within the last 20 or so years, we have had a variety of new diseases emerge and re-emerge. Viruses like the Nipah viruses, which emerged in the 1990s. We also had a rabies relative, an Australian Lysa virus in the 90s as well, severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, in the 2000s, and Ebola, which after emerging in 1976, seemed to disappear until its emergence in 1989 in Reston, Virginia. And we've had subsequent outbreaks of Ebola, including the largest outbreak to date in West Africa. There have been over 27,000 cases and 11,000 deaths. Now, these viruses I've just mentioned do have a common denominator, a potential reservoir, and that is the bat. So because of this, bats have become an increasing center of interest for research. And I just want to get a few things out of the way. Bats are not rodents. They do belong to their own order of mammals known as Chiroptera, which means hand wing. There are over 1,000 species, and they are the second most abundant and diverse group of mammals, second only to rodents. There are over 1,000 species, and they have been around for over 50 million years. Now, I have mentioned a few viruses with bat associations, but what about other viruses? Well, as of now, there have been over 130 viruses that have been detected or isolated in bats. And as you can see, it's kind of a long list. But, you know, a lot of these viruses have been discovered within the last 20 or so years, and this is often stemmed by new disease emergence, like the viruses I mentioned earlier. SARS, for example. Bats were not associated with coronaviruses until the SARS outbreak, and they associated bats with SARS, so they thought they would investigate to see if there were any other relationships. And they have found coronaviruses in 102 bat species, and the alpha and beta coronavirus species, I believe. So what makes bats good reservoirs? And as you can see, there are a lot of viruses that can be found in bats. Well, bats have a variety of unique characteristics that make them potentially good candidates for reservoirs. I won't be able to go into detail about all the characteristics or the unique things about bats, so I'm going to talk about a few of the major ones. First is the ability to fly, and bats are the only mammals that can do so. And not only can they fly, but they can fly long distances, and some species do engage in seasonal migrations. A species of Mexican free-tailed bat can cover between 20 to 50 miles in an area. So they'll forage pretty far from where they roost. Fruit bats will forage usually 30 miles from where they roost. Being able to fly has given them the ability to spread out pretty much all over the world, and we find them on every continent except Antarctica. We do see the highest species diversity, or the highest number of species, near the equatorial line, and they're in areas that has great biodiversity richness and habitat type. Indonesia, for example, does have the highest amount of bat species. You'll find 219 bat species there. And here in the United States, we have over 40 bat species. Another thing about bats is they can lower their body temperature to adjust for times when they need to conserve energy. And this is useful in times when food is scarce. So if you have an insectivorous bat, there's not a lot of bugs in the winter, it might be better for them to engage in hibernation to save some energy. And this leads to their other unique characteristic, their diet. And it's pretty diverse as far as mammals go. They can eat anything from nectar, pollen, fruit, insects, fish, amphibian, and blood, which the vampire bats, which you might have heard of. Also, bats do have a long lifespan relative to body size. They live 3.5 times longer than a mammal of similar size. So if you looked at a small wild rodent that might live 2 years, a bat could live at least 7 years. However, average lifespan for bats is between 10 to 20 years, and the oldest recorded age was 39 in abandoned Myotis species. And this also can relate to their reproductive cycle. Temperate female bats will only give birth to one pup a year, whereas species in a more tropical area will have two pups a year. And they do form large aggregations. In fact, these are some of the largest aggregations of any mammal in the world. They get up into the millions. In Texas, in the United States, we have one of the largest natural colonies of bats in the world. They can get up to 20 million. And I encourage you, if you're ever in Texas, to go to Bracken Bat Cave and check it out during the summer. It's very impressive to watch them emerge out of that cave. Lastly, and I think most importantly, is the immunological system. We don't know how it works. Bats don't seem to show many signs of clinical pathology. They've infected bats with a variety of viruses, and the only one they know that will show clinical pathology generally is rabies. And we don't know why that is. And despite their association with viruses and being reservoirs, we don't know why they're not studied as much. And because of all these new viruses emerging, they're starting to put more research toward them. Genome studies may help provide answers, and they've even saw that bat genes associated with immune response are co-evolving more rapidly in bats than other vertebrates. They don't know why that is, but hopefully we will soon have some answers. And I think that all these characteristics, they might work together. For example, the ability to fly might have made for some adaptations to the immune system. The long lifespan. There are a lot of things we just simply don't know, and I think that hopefully this interest will lead to more research and we'll have better answers. We'll might help us with understanding how to combat immune problems. I mean, just a variety of things. Excuse me. So you're probably wondering how bats acquire, or people acquire viruses found in bats. Well, there's a variety of conditions that need to occur for these viruses to spill over. And I think that we're starting to realize that there's a high degree of interrelatedness between humans, animals, and the environment in which they are found. So factors that influence disease emergence. As you can see, there are quite a few factors. When we look at ecological changes, of course we know about climate change. We look at habitat modification, destruction, loss, fragmentation, agricultural expansion, and intensification. Now if we look at the habitat loss and fragmentation, a good example would be in West Africa, the site of the Ebola outbreak. There has been a lot of deforestation, and a lot of the forests that are remaining are becoming fragmented. They've done some research, and they believe that these bats that lived in this forest, the fruit bats, they're having to come into closer contact with people. They're having to roost near people. They're having to search for greater food sources. And the fragmented patches also, you're going to have a higher population of bats looking at living in those areas. So that could also increase disease prevalence. And typically, disease prevalence might be low in bats. So maybe one bat in 100 might have a virus like Ebola. But if you have more bats, you're going to increase that prevalence and increase the chance for disease exposure. With agriculture expansion and intensification, it really can impact that. And we have seen that with a virus that I'm about to talk about. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the movie Contagion, but that movie is loosely based on the Nipah virus, which emerged in Malaysia in 1998. And it basically came about was there was a pig farm that was built right next to rainforest. There were fruit orchards that were also built next to the pig enclosures. Now what happened was initial transmission probably occurred between pigs and bats, and it was maintained enzootically until there was a high enough density of pigs where the virus was able to amplify, finally make that jump into humans. So as you can see, there was that tie-in. They actually researched that and found that that was probably the result of why that disease emerged. Nipah virus is part of a group of viruses that actually have evolved with bats for a very long time, so these viruses have been around for millions of years in bats. But it wasn't until human activity kind of caused that disease to emerge. We can also look at population growth as a contributor to influence of diseases. When you grow a population, you're going to need more food, more space. So that's also going to tie into climate change, modification, destruction, and loss of habitat. And international travel and commerce. We saw international travel impacting the SARS outbreak. It was able to spread into different countries as well. So you're probably thinking, well, bats are gross, maybe we should just get rid of them. But they're very, very important animals to our environment. And it's actually estimated that bats in the United States are worth between $3.7 billion to $53 billion a year in terms of insect control. They help reduce damage on crops and also the reduction of pesticide use. They also pollinate plants and flowers. They also reseed forests. Pollination of foods we eat and drink, like coconuts, cashews, avocados, and tequila. And guano is used to make fertilizer, which can be useful for us. Echolocation has also been used as models for sonar system development. And now bats right now are facing their own epidemic, white nose syndrome. Now this fungus is attacking them and it's killing them. It's actually one of the other few diseases we know that's really impacting bats. There actually have been between 5.5 and 6 million deaths of bats since 2006. And as I told you earlier, they're worth $3.7 billion, so you can imagine how this is going to affect our agricultural system. So what now? What can we do now? And I think that we can't approach this by ourselves. We do need to look towards other professions. Now, the NIPA virus investigation they conducted was actually a contribution from several different professionals. There was mathematicians, there was physicians, veterinarians, ecologists, all working together to solve this problem. And I believe that that really is the only way to solve the issue of disease emergence, because we're not ever going to be able to completely control it, but maybe by identifying the factors associated with it. And as we are seeing now, a lot of the factors are related to human activity. When we impact our environment, we're impacting the animals that live within that environment. I think the initiatives like the One Health are really a great approach because they focus on a synergistic approach between animals, people, and the environment. And bats do have a variety of diseases, or they've been associated with a variety of diseases, I should say. And it might be easy to villainize them, but I think it's important to remember the role these animals play in the environment, and that disease emergence is not the fault of the bat, but human activity that has resulted in the emergence of these viruses. And making a scapegoat of bats will not help protect us from disease emergence, but maybe understanding the factors associated with it will. And I do hope that if you take anything away from my presentation, it's that we are all connected to the environment and the animals within it, and bats aren't necessarily the bad guys. We do need to bridge the gap between areas like wildlife biology and public health and understand the role the environment plays as well. Any questions?
Thank you, Lisa. Are there any questions for Lisa? Well, I'll start out. One of the more recent ones that may be linked to bats, one of the viral emergencies, MERS coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Have you any new information about that?
Well, they now, you know, they think the reservoir may be Campbell's, but they actually look back in history and they see that MERS might have come from bats initially, but now it's evolving to where it can switch into another reservoir and that might be the camel now. So that's what they're leading toward. But they do see maybe a history link, evolutionary speaking, to MERS and bats a long, long time ago.
Anyone else have a question about combating disease? I'm sorry. I'm going to keep on unless you have questions. Okay.
So, with the bats and the reservoir species, there seems to be a trend with species. So, are the larger bats more likely to serve as reservoir mice, or are the smaller bats, like the little brown bats that we would have in this area?
Well, they basically all can carry them. And, you know, I mentioned Ebola earlier, and I just want to clarify that Ebola, we can't associate Ebola with bats to reservoir yet. We detected it in them, but we haven't been able to prove it through isolation. So I just want to clarify that bats aren't reservoirs of Ebola. We think that is probable host. We know that maybe from Marburg, but we do see it in different species. And it could be like diets. You see there's a varied range of diets, so it could expose them to other things. And you kind of see it just pretty even. I mean, you'll see fruit bats carry the Hendra and Nipah viruses. You'll see, you know, obviously insectivorous bats with the rabies and other things, so it's just a basically a nice mix. All the bats can carry it.
Okay, anyone else? And if you think of one, you know, just write it down or whatever you need to do, and we'll have some more time at the end. Okay, if not, we'll move to the next speaker. I'd like to introduce Dr. Bauer. her presentations on the knowledge of and protection practices against zoonotic diseases among goat owners in Indiana.